People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this special two-part edition of PTR, we bring you Howard Zinn.
And there's this assumption that there is a unity of interest in this country. And the language of the culture keeps assuming that and keeps impressing that on us. Because we use words that embrace us all. The nation, the country, America. No. So I am, from time to time, accused of castigating America because I've castigated Reagan or Clinton or somebody. And something, you mean they are America?
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno de Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Nicole Trejo has the month off. In October 1998, Howard Zinn spoke on the topic of a working-class citizen's economic bill of rights. Professor Zinn's speech was sponsored by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local Number 7, in Denver, Colorado. We'd like to thank Roger Leisner of Radio Free Maine for providing us with Professor Zinn's talk. This is part two.
Pope John Paul, whom I like to quote, we don't have many allies in those higher circles. And so when you get a real good one, you like to make use of it. Pope John Paul, this did not appear in an American newspaper. It appeared in an Italian newspaper, La Stampa, which I read every day, of course. And, an interview in La Stampa with John Paul, and he said, well, do you want to understand why there are so many communists around the world and socialism and Marxists and this and that? He says, the answer is simple. The answer is, and these are the words he used, savage, unbridled capitalism. Yes. Yeah, that's my Pope. Savage, unbridled capitalism. I would never dare say a thing like that. <You know. laughs> So those are the realities, and then we're faced with a question of what do we do about them. But it's important to keep those realities in mind and to keep people informed of those realities, because it's interesting, even people who are not doing well themselves can, if they keep reading the media and listening to political speeches, can believe that they're living better than they are living. You know, the people are struggling, and they read, the economy is healthy. Well, I mean, who would dare go out in the street and tell people the economy is not healthy, you know, when everybody knows it's healthy except you, you see. So therefore it's important for the facts and the reality to be kept alive, to give the lie to this notion that we're all doing well, you know, in this very rich country. And very often, just giving people information is the push that starts people off to thinking about what they will do. Some of you may know Ignacio Silone's novel Fontamara, but it's a novel that he wrote about the Mussolini period in Italy, and about peasants under Mussolini and their what they went through, and the repression against them, and in the novel, this little group of dissenters, and of course it was dangerous to dissent under Mussolini. This little group of dissenters puts out an underground newspaper. And in this underground newspaper, all they do is give information, tell people things that they haven't heard about. And they in this newspaper, they will just give bits of news. So-and-so had his farm taken away from him the other day. So-and-so's child died of sickness because no doctor available. You know, so-and-so was arrested by the police. Just listing those facts, and then they would say, "Che fare? What shall we do? What shall we do?" They wouldn't tell people what to do. They just give them the information, and they'd ask, "What shall we do?" And people would get together, and they'd begin to talk about what they might do about these things. And we have, you know, promises have been made. It's very easy to make promises, but the people who make promises very often have to be called to account for these promises. It's very easy to pass the 14th Amendment, to promise racial equality, and not to deliver on it. But at a certain point, the demand was made by black people in this country that they had to deliver on it. And it was important to keep the promise in mind, even though the promise had been broken again and again. And so promises have been made in this country about economic justice, the promise of the Declaration of Independence, you know, that this is what governments are set up for. Governments are set up to ensure certain rights, and the equal right of all of us to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And how can you have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness unless you have sort of the basic biologic needs that people require in order to live, a good health and a good home and food and work? The promise of course, the Declaration of Independence is not a legal document. No. The Constitution is a legal document. The Declaration of Independence is just a promise. But it's a promise that deserves to be held up and deserves to be looked upon as a model for something that we're trying to achieve. And from various points in American history, promises have been made. FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt, in World War II, in 1944, talked about an economic bill of rights. Very specifically about, you know, the right to housing and jobs and health and so on. Really marvelous. Of course, nothing happened to it. It was never fulfilled. It was done, you might say, in the heat of war, wars very often will bring out great rhetoric, which is not then fulfilled. But the rhetoric should not be forgotten. The Economic Bill of Rights should not be forgotten. And then there were the words of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which all the nations signed after World War II, including the United States, after a while. And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and, you know, Articles 24, 25, 23, 26, talks about every human being on earth deserves a place to live, a decent place to live, deserves a right to a living wage, deserves health care. People need to be given equal pay for equal work. And that's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So there are these words, you know, there are these promises which have not been fulfilled by the economic policies of this country over, you know, a long period of time. And if you talk about fulfilling these promises, if you talk about the government guaranteeing full employment, and some of you may know that in 1946, again perhaps in the emotions generated by World War II, Congress passed the Full Employment Act. And the Full Employment Act talks about the government guaranteeing work. Now there's a basis, right, for something being done to make sure that people who want to work will have work. You don't simply throw people off the welfare rolls and say private enterprise will take care of you in the way that private enterprise has always taken care of people, you say. And when you begin talking about this is what the government should do, and And the government should stop giving $250, now $260, maybe $270 billion for the military and use that money for human needs, you know. The government should guarantee health care the way they do in Canada and Sweden and other countries in the world where you just don't have to think about filling out forms or doing this or that. You just go and take care of your problem, you know. I spent some time in Italy and I got sick and, you know, there was no money involved. It's wonderful to be in a society where you can get basic things and not think about money and think that every human being deserves this. Well, if you begin to talk about these things, then some people will say, oh, you want big government. Remember the big government? And you're supposed to shrink back in your seat at that point. Me? Did I say something? Did I say big government? It's a dirty thing to say. Big government. And I remember how Clinton faded back, you know, and, you know, when people accused him of, me, big government, no. And then, remember Clinton's famous remark, the era of big government is over. Right. What hypocrisy. Really? The era of big government is over? Have we ever had a bigger government? I mean, have we ever not had big government in this country? We've always had big government. There's never been an era of big government. Our whole history is a history of big government. That's what the Founding Fathers did. They established big government. And they established it for a very definite reason, because big government would serve the purposes of the merchants and the slaveholders and the bondholders and the land speculators. They wanted big government. And all through the 19th century, the corporate powers used big government to give the railroads 100 million acres of land free, to pass tariffs for the manufacturers and subsidies for the merchant marine. They loved big government. And only in the 20th century, when, for the first time, under the impetus of the socialist movement and the IWW and the labor struggles of the late 19th and early 20th century, when the government began to react to that, we began to get reform legislation, and in the 30s, with the great labor movement and the turmoil over the country, all over the country, that we began to get the New Deal legislation on housing and minimum wages. Only then did the cry go up, oh, big government, the welfare state, as if the state had not been a welfare state all through its history, but welfare, of course, for the corporations and not for ordinary people. So I think we have to be prepared to deal with that, you know, that question. And by the way, World War II, almost everything I say is by the way. I have nothing real to say. It's just all these, you know. World War II, we had big government. When we have to win a war, we have very big government. We have to do something that requires mobilization of the resources of the country to win a war. Then we get big government, and nobody complains. Nobody says, let's turn the war over to private enterprise, you see. Let Dunkin' Donuts take care of it, you know. Between Exxon and Dunkin' Donuts, they will take care of the problem. Yeah, no. No. Big government is okay. We had full employment during the war. We put 20 million people to work during the war in various jobs, military and civilian. And wages were fairly decent, better than they had been. The country came out of depression as a result of big government during World War II. So what the society is willing to do in time of war, it should be willing to do in time of peace. And these things, that history, should not be forgotten. I mean, all this history is important, I think, for dealing with the objections that people make. And you need that history, because if you don't have that history, it's as if you were born yesterday. And if you were born yesterday, people can tell you anything. And you have no way of checking up on it. And it's only with history that you have a way of checking up on the things that people tell you. So, well, what else is there to say? That obviously we have a lot to do. We have a lot of organizing to do. We shouldn't despair, because people have despaired all through the ages, you know, but they've come through, gone through all sorts of periods. Think of the 1950s, and people was walking around gloomy in the 1950s, saying, "We'll know, nothing will ever happen in this country." And then come the 60s, and you get a civil rights movement, and an anti-war movement, and a women's movement, and a gay movement, and an environmental movement, right? Disabled persons movement, and so on. And you know, the indignation of people builds up under the surface. Well, we've seen this happen in other countries, right? I mean, surprises take place in other countries. Suddenly, the Berlin Wall comes down. Suddenly, the Franco dictatorship is gone. Suddenly, you know, a tyranny is toppled. How come? Because things were happening beneath the surface, and people were organizing quietly, and you couldn't tell what was going on. And then, at a certain point in time, they broke through. And remarkable changes come, and everybody is surprised. So you have to persist and in the faith, in the hope, not the certainty, but the possibility. Probability? I don't know. Somewhere between possible. Is there something between possibility and probability? But somehow yes, if you persist, something good will happen. You don't know when. You don't even know if. But you know that in the meantime, you will, life will be more meaningful. Well, all of you know this. You've been involved. And you know that life becomes meaningful when you work with other people for something good. I want to end, by reading a poem. Written by a friend of mine. I only read poems written by friends of mine. Daniel Berrigan. And he wrote this after a friend of his, who is an activist for homeless people in Washington, D.C., Mitch Snyder. Some of you may remember him. Wonderful man. And he died tragically in Washington. And Dan Berrigan wrote this poem in loving memory, Mitchell Snyder. Some stood up once and sat down. Some walked a mile and walked away. Some stood up twice, then sat down. "I've had it," they said. Some walked 2 miles, then walked away. "It's too much," they cried. Some stood and stood and stood. They were taken for fools. They were taken for being taken in. Some walked and walked and walked. They walked the earth. They walked the waters. They walked the air. "Why do you stand?" they were asked. "And why do you walk?" "Because of the children," they said, "and because of the heart, and because of the bread, because the cause is the heart's beat, and the children born, and the risen bread." So, thank you. So, it's your turn.
That was part two of a talk by Howard Zinn on a working class citizen's economic bill of rights. We'd like to thank Roger Lesner of Radio Free Maine for providing us with this talk by Professor Zinn. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. If you'd like more information about the League, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That phone number once again, 1-800-691-6888. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On behalf of Nicole Trejo and the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.
Check it.